Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m. The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Minimal contact in stadiums shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back. So a lot has happened in the Premier League over the last few days, and still plenty more games yet to come over this festive period. We've got Mark Lawrenson with us on the line this evening to chat about everything that's been happening. Mark, I hope you've had a great Christmas. How are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm all well, touch wood, and had a very good Christmas. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. So Manchester United, they're in action tonight at 8 o'clock against Wolves. Do you think we are seeing the start of a sustained title challenge finally coming from Old Trafford?
Well, it would appear to be that way, certainly, but we're still a little bit wondering and worried because, obviously, you know, in a lot of games this season, they've kind of conceded goals early on and got on to keep winning games. And yet, at the moment, it might just look like they've found the best team. And also, I think, you know, and we're looking at, say, comparing to somebody like Manchester City, both teams seem to have started quite slowly. We know that obviously pre-season was somewhat truncated, and teams and players sometimes do take a little bit longer than other teams and players. But it looks now as though you kind of they've got that little bit of a swagger back. And I know they keep conceding goals, which is something they're going to have to obviously sort out, but they've got a swagger in terms of chances that they're making, and they've scored loads of goals, as everybody knows. And it would appear at the moment that they seem to, well, they've started to improve the home form, which quite honestly was very, very poor for the first few home games of the season.
It seems that they have an ability to bounce back better than a lot of teams in the Premier League. They've almost got used to the inconsistency over the last few seasons, where they can brush off a bad defeat or a bad draw when required.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is when you look at the depth of forward looking players, for want of a better description, they've got lots, and they've got fabulous pace as well up front, as we know from all the players that they've got. Midfield, you know, they kind of, it looks like they seem to like at times, you know, the two holding midfield players. I'm not quite sure Manchester United need to play that way, to be honest with you. And I think sometimes, you know, you can make yourself a better defensive team by obviously playing in the opponent's half more. And I think looking at the type of players that United have got, I think maybe that's the way they're thinking or they're sort of trying to go. And, you know, they look fitter and they look sharper. And as I said before, I think it started to look now like they've actually, maybe the manager knows his best system, stroke formation. And the other thing, talking about the manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, if Pochettino gets the PSG job, then obviously he, every time he loses a game, he gets Pochettino, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. If his man's gone to PSG, he won't be getting that for much longer.
Well, that's the thing. That noise that surrounds Old Trafford in every area of the club is such a huge thing. And there was this very pronounced link with Mauricio Pochettino after he went on Sky Sports, because it felt that after he had made that appearance, there was almost a pointed realisation that I want to be back in English football. Now that's not going to happen. There's a little bit more freedom, at least in the discourse around Manchester United, for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer right now.
Yeah, and I think there's two things. I think the chief exec has just backed him. He's backed him all the time, and you know, he's not had the disastrous vote of confidence as such from Edward Woodward. But you know, they just said, no, listen, this is the way it's going to be. And in all honesty, when United went out of the Champions League, if the American owners actually wanted to do something about it, I thought that would be the time, because obviously that, in terms of a finance and a revenue stream, you know, going in the Europa League, yeah, it's all right, and it's a good competition to win, but financially not particularly good. And as we know with the Americans, they're very rarely at games. Well, no one's at games at the moment, but even when crowds are allowed in, they very rarely go. And the thing with them is the bottom line, you know, what are our shares worth? And I would imagine after going out of the Champions League, the shares went down, but they've not made any noises, and they certainly, it doesn't appear as though they've gone to Edward Wood to say, look, you know, let's go and take Pochettino. So from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's point of view, that's obviously a massive vote of confidence, and but in the right way, not in the wrong way.
Sure. You mentioned there that you've been impressed with Manchester United's attack. Is it a little bit harsh then to look at how good Bruno Fernandes has been and suggest that they are a little bit over-reliant on him?
No. It's a bit like saying Liverpool are over-reliant on Mane, Salah, etc., you know, and Firmino. So, no, you know, every team at that level are going to have real star players. I don't know, you know, a lot of teams that don't have. So, no, that's not a great issue. I think what he's done since he signed, and he's virtually since his first game, he looked like he'd been playing in the Premier League for like 18 months, 2 years. But what he does is, and if you're a forward player, every time he gets on the ball, he looks to pass it forward. It sounds really simple, and it is. But, you know, and he passes you into space. He gives you the ball where you want it, not necessarily where he wants to put it, which is a big thing as well. And he just looks a top player who's got fabulous confidence, and he's big and he's strong. I think that's another thing, you know. Sometimes when we see these guys and come and play in the Premier League, it takes them a while to get used to, the number of games. Imagine at the moment they must be thinking, what the hell are we doing playing like every 2 days and stuff like that. But he's coped with it fantastically, and he's got great qualities, as everybody knows.
When was the last time you've seen somebody signed from outside the Premier League make such a good impact in his first 12 months at a football club?
Well, I might chuck the Liverpool goalkeeper and centre back at you, Van Dijk and also Alisson. But yeah, and especially in the place where Fernandes plays, in the position that he plays, he's been outstanding. No, it does happen. It's a strange thing when you sign, you know, players from abroad. I'm tempted to say foreign. Well, we're all foreign in many different respects, aren't we? But you know, the fact is, you just never know. Sometimes you chuck them in straight away and they're outstanding. Sometimes you need 3 months, 6 months, you know, do they speak English? That whole kind of thing. And I mean, if you look, and I just mentioned the Liverpool comparison with obviously Van Dijk and Alisson, but if you look at somebody like Keita at Liverpool, it's taken him an awful long time to get in the team regularly. In fact, he's not even in the team regularly now. So it's just one of those things. There's no rhyme or reason, but it's certainly great when you pay, what, 60 or 70 million, whatever price it was, and he's right in the team. And, you know, he looks like he's a top player. He is a top player. And I think from the manager's point of view, then if he goes back to the chief exec wanting somebody else, he's seen already that, you know, the chief exec will go, well, he's got this one absolutely totally right in terms of recruitment. Let's give him some more money to get somebody else.
Let's talk about Liverpool then. Jurgen Klopp wasn't exactly a delighted individual after the draw against West Brom the other day. He says, in the end, we can draw a Premier League game. That happens. It can happen against West Brom, he said. They had a new manager and they played in the first half a system I didn't see a lot in my life, a 6-4-0 or whatever. So that's it, Mark. A 6-4-0, that's how you get at Liverpool.
Well, you don't get at them. I think that's how you stop them, definitely. But now, listen, Liverpool just didn't particularly play well. They scored a goal early and probably thought, you know what, 1-0 down, West Brom will come out, but obviously that didn't happen at all. Give West Brom, you know, ultimate credit, because they absolutely totally worked their socks off. They made it extremely difficult. Liverpool just didn't play particularly well on the day. And I think, you know, I think they all came out and said at the end of the match, look, you know, it's a point gain, but of course, you'd have expected them to roll West Brom over. But we've also had, or it seems to be to me, there's an awful lot of draws seem to have crept in terms of the Premier League of late. So they won't be bothered. They'll go, where are they tomorrow? They're at Newcastle, aren't they? And they'll go about, and it'll be very similar. Because Newcastle, you know, because of the COVID they've had and missing one or two players and players not fully fit, I think Steve Bruce under a little bit of pressure, and they'll just sit in and try and make the odd opportunity against Liverpool. But, you know, when you win the league, and you kind of get used to this, and that's why everybody makes this fuss, and quite rightly, about Leeds, which is they're just going to play the way they play against you, regardless of how you play. It's like, you know, we play this way. If we play really well on the day, we'll probably beat you. If we don't, you might beat us. You might score a few goals against us. So everybody's different. You know, I think for Sam Allardyce, it's a really good point for them, and he managed to keep 11 players on the pitch as well. But that's a hell of a job to keep them in the Premier League for me.
Is there something about Sam Allardyce that gets under the skin of Jurgen Klopp, do you think?
Yeah. Well, he keeps getting results about him, against him. So Jurgen will hate it. Well, absolutely. Well, he does hate it. But he's, you know, look, they did really, really well in terms of getting a point, and good luck to them. And you know, Liverpool weren't particularly at the best. I was in the gym yesterday, believe it or not, and this fellow started moaning to me about them and about Liverpool. And he's a Liverpool fan. I said, what the hell? I said, like, we've been unbelievable for however long it is since Klopp's been in charge. But that's what happens. We had it in our time as well, which was that, you know, everybody thought you had to win absolutely every single game. And it just doesn't happen. And it just doesn't happen even more now than it did then, because other teams are so prepared for the way that you play tactically, and they can work on things all week against you. And obviously with some of them it works, and some of the others it doesn't work.
And was there a particular area that this person in the gym was complaining about? Was there a certain player that annoyed him?
He was moaning about Liverpool's finishing. Right. So he got short stock because I said, you know that front three that we've had for 3 years that keep winning all the games? I said, what a load of crap they are, aren't they?
Yeah, fair enough. Fair point. On the defence, Mark, I mean, the question has obviously been there all season. How long can they last without Van Dijk? And you would have thought for a while there that after the Gomez injury, after Matip's recurring injuries, that they would be down to the bare bones and you would start to see Liverpool exposed a little bit more. But it just seems that they've built up almost some muscle memory this season to survive crisis after crisis after crisis. And of course, the latest Matip injury is a real pain for Jurgen Klopp. But it does feel that they have that muscle memory, as I say, to know how to get around this a little bit better than other teams, it seems.
Well, the first thing you say is, I'm not a massive statistical man, but I think in most games Liverpool play, they have the ball more than the opposition, and generally they're playing in the opposition's half, so it means they're not conceding chances or goals. So that's a big thing. Fabinho's been outstanding because he reads the game extremely well, and he's got a little bit of pace if he makes a mistake. The problem with Matip is he's made of glass a little bit, and he's rather fragile. The other thing with Liverpool as well is that generally, you know, I mean, apart from Van Dijk and Gomez, really, they aren't missing too many players who would start on a regular basis, and they've all managed to adopt it. But I just think what he's done is, and some of the younger players have come in and done really, really well, but Liverpool, in the majority of games that I've certainly seen them play, they haven't been under any great pressure defensively. On occasion, yes, but for kind of periods of time in a game, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, no. And I just think, you know, that I mentioned the front three before. I mean, the front three just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, when you're playing against them, you probably think, you know, play against Liverpool and get the ball in the opposition penalty area, you know, high balls, crosses, and they're not particularly tall and all those kind of things. You never really get the ball. Therein lies the problem. And I think Liverpool, you know, when they play against the likes of Manchester United and teams like that, we will see exactly how they are defensively. But there's not a great worry. And, you know, so these kids have come in, and the more minutes they get, the more games they get, the more they understand the league, etc., and the positions exactly that they play in the team. I have to say that I thought we'd have struggled a little bit more than we have. You expect to draw games, you expect to lose the odd game as well, but I can't over kind of egg the fact that the three players up front plus Jota when he was fit, they've just been unbelievable. And the last 3 years, and this going into the fourth, they hardly get injured. You know, if all three aren't brilliant on the day, it's normally one. And they just create so many chances and so many opportunities and score so many goals. And I said about 2 years ago, I said I think they were the best three in the world. And everyone laughed at me because of the front three at PSG. But the point I was trying to make is it's not just about scoring goals. It's also about working extremely hard for the team going back when you're defending as well. And these three, quite simply, are the best trio that Liverpool have ever had.
For sure, and they will be hoping to right the wrongs of that West Brom game tomorrow evening, as you say. They're at Newcastle. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff. One of the midweek fixtures we've already seen happen is Chelsea against Aston Villa. Chelsea falling to a 1-1 draw in that game and really didn't deserve much more out of the game. Chris Sutton on the BBC called Chelsea a crisis club afterwards. Would you go along with that yourself?
No. No, team in crisis is when you need 20 points to stay up and you can only get 18. So no, I don't believe in that. It's a bit of a shock statement. I can understand what he's trying to say, and that, you know, everyone mentions the 200 million quid. I don't see the manager under particular pressure at the moment, because I think that the thing for Frank Lampard this year is to get into the Champions League, and I think that is possible. I think they've been inconsistent. The boys they've signed from Germany on the days have looked brilliant, and on other days you had noticed that they were playing. But no, Chelsea are going to be a bit like that, I think, for the rest of the season. But they've got some excellent players going forward, and they're just having a dip. See, that's the thing in the moment. It's in the Premier League. You look at Tottenham the other week, just before they went to Liverpool. And people are going, you know, they say they're fantastic. Mourinho's got them doing this. They're really difficult to beat. They don't concede. And they go and lose two games in a week. So it's just the world that we live in. Look, you know, the likes of Chelsea and the likes of Tottenham, they'll all be up there in the top six. Manchester United, Man City, Liverpool, maybe even another like obviously a Leicester or something like that, or maybe even an Aston Villa. But that's just the way that it is, and I don't think any team's going to run away with the Premier League this year. And I do think it will go the distance in terms of who's going to win it.
Is there a reason for Chelsea's lack of consistency, though? Are you seeing a common thread here?
Well, I think the common thread probably still with them at the moment a little bit is they probably don't know what their best team is. And it may well be that they might have to play. You know, they've got so many good attacking players, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you've got a really good team. And I think we've seen with lots of teams that sometimes, if you say you've got five defensive-minded players in the team, excluding the goalkeeper, I'm talking about outfield players. You've got five defensive players in the team and five attacking players in the team. Maybe they've got that balance wrong. Maybe they should have six defensive players in the team, and because the other four who could play up front, you know, all the Perisic and Havertz and all those kind of boys, you know, are such good players that they can win games with four players. So it's one of those. Frank Lampard is a bright lad. He's a very, very intelligent guy, and he'll check all the stats. He obviously, you know, sees them all playing and training and all those kind of things. He'll get it right, but I don't think he'll get it right enough to win the league. But I think he's got a real chance of finishing in the top four, because they look like they've got a team who could go on a run of like five, six, seven straight wins with the players they've got.
The unfortunate thing about the spending and the money that they spent is that we have a conversation about someone like Bruno Fernandes, who hits the ground running instantaneously at Manchester United. Albeit they spent money and wasted it in the past themselves, they've got an instant return from a player like that. Was there too much expectation on the likes of Kai Havertz, given his age, to hit the ground running? And then maybe on top of that, with Timo Werner as well, albeit he's a more experienced footballer and perhaps has been playing a bit better than Havertz.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we equate, you know, massive transfer fees when players are brought in with, like, they've got to be absolutely brilliant straight away. And, you know, it's players that sometimes you bring in on a free transfer, someone like Thiago or somebody like that, who you know, kind of, don't say they go in unnoticed, but they're not anything like that under the same kind of pressure. But you know, Frank Lampard won't be worried about the money. He will just realise that you make up your team in completely different ways. And say sometimes you get a free transfer guy in, or one that's out of contract completely. And you know, you balance the whole team. And it just looks a little bit at the moment that they haven't quite got the balance right. But you know, as I said to you before, it's a bit like a manager in the Premier League. If you win a couple of games, you're an absolute fantastic, you're a god, you lose a couple, and you know, you're not fit for purpose. But I think that's just the world that we live in, isn't it? It's either absolutely brilliant or it's absolutely rubbish. There just doesn't seem to be any kind of middle ground anymore.
There doesn't, you're right, and I guess we should give credit to the absolutely brilliant Aston Villa last night as well, because they were absolutely rubbish 2 months ago, according to a lot of people, after a brilliant start to the season, a wobble in November. And that is seems to be the really impressive thing about this team, Mark, is that they've got right back on track throughout December.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also that, you know, they've looked really, really good defensively, so they've done a lot of work on that. I think John Terry will have a big part to play in that particular situation. I think in terms of recruitment as well, for this season, they've done really, really well. Dean Smith is like one of the best managers in the league. If you saw what he did at Walsall with absolutely no money, and, you know, he knew eventually he was going to go somewhere. Well, he went to Brentford and he kind of thought, well, it's a bigger move in terms. It's probably one league higher, but Brentford. And look what he did at Brentford. Look at all those players that are coming through now. Even the ones that he sold have been replaced, and the players they've got at Brentford, they all look, certainly the strikers look like top players. So he's got it, Dean Smith. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And, you know, where we talk about Hasselhoedtl at Southampton, and when he got beat 9-0 by Leicester, and you know, and we thought, oh my God, he might be gone, and he's done brilliant because they kept him on, and he has done brilliant, by the way, he's building a team. Dean Smith the same, end of last season. You know, if the owner's so gone into and say, look, you know, Dean, thanks, but no thanks. Just escaped through in the last game, and they backed him, and it really does make a difference. And this is the whole thing. I mean, let's look in the league and look at Tony Pulis has gone from Sheffield Wednesday after 10 games. What's the point? You know, I look at that, and I don't know the owner or anything, but I look and I look at the owner, and I just think, what on earth? It's not like, you know, it's not like you own a building company and you employ 10 carpenters just to get one good one. Football's not like that. It doesn't work, and you've got to give people time. And it's just really, really strange. So I just think hats off now for one or two of the owners and the chief executives of some of the teams who realise that you've got to be able to build. Look what Burnley did with Dyche. He got them in the Premier League. Hardly spent any money, got relegated, and they gave him a pile of money in the Championship to build the team back up. And all right, he had a sticky start to the season, but they'll be fine. They'll be in the Premier League again. I think they're going to be sold in the next 48 hours. And I want that little bit, I just want a little bit of common sense to come back into football from that point of view. Whether it will remains to be seen.
Yeah, Burnley, a great example, proving that you can actually get relegated well. And you'd like to have thought that had Aston Villa gone down, they would have stuck with Smith themselves and put something together for another successful season, even in a different division. Listen, Mark, great chatting to you. Enjoy the rest of the festive football and have a great new year.
Thanks, same to you. Thanks to all the listeners. Thank you.
Thanks a million. Mark Lawrenson there on the line. That is our football coverage for today. Up next, though, it has been a massive day of racing once again at Leopardstown. We'll be joined by Tom Malone.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Minimal contact in stadiums shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.